The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm really excited about our guest today. We're going to be talking about how about rethinking everything. Do you sometimes get the feeling that a lot of what you were taught or picked up along the way from experts or even your own family about life, family, parenting, marriage, sex, love, and kids isn't really useful or true? Have you felt that you've done a lot of reinventing, reassessing as you go along in your career, family relationships, and your sense of self and your mission? My guest this week, Barb Lundgren, has not only done this with a passion for herself, but she's created a safe space where families can come together to do this kind of exploration for themselves. She's found that too often we're led down a path of conformity, intimidation, and self-doubt, which does not get us where we want to go, and even worse, limits the prospects for our own children. Each year, she gathers families together for a conference near Dallas, and brings together families that are seeking to get to the core truth of living in joy and transformation authentically in a community focused on freedom and creativity. So listen in to experience a wealth of ideas on how to rethink everything without getting lost in the process. I want to tell you a little more about Barb Lundgren before we talk with her. She's a founder of the international conference called Rethinking Everything, now in its 16th year. Rethinking Everything passionately supports all ways of becoming and living authentically. This life-altering conference hosts hundreds of children, teens, young adults, parents, and grandparents each year in the Dallas area of Texas in early September. And the information is already up on the web. Find out more detail at www.rethinkingeverything.net. Barb's also the co-publisher of three revolutionary magazines, Rethinking Everything Parent, Rethinking Everything Life, and Rethinking Everything Sex. You can tell your own personal story of transformative change by going to rethinkingeverythingpublishing.com, where you can contribute to those magazines. Barb's most important work, she says, and the greatest change in her life has revolved around her children now grown. She made an early decision in her mothering career to give up everything she thought she knew about children, parenting, and education and create a rich environment to support their freedom to be. And she says the 30 years since then have been nothing short of remarkable. And I know what she's talking about. So welcome, Barbara. It's wonderful to have you on Family First.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed listening to you talk about me.
Oh, good. Well, it's a pleasure. So I want to start out, Barbara, by asking you to share your personal journey to rethinking everything about parenting children and education.
Sure. My oldest son is now 29 years old, and about 30 years ago, my husband and I were absolutely committed to never having children. He worked in advertising and I worked for a university, and we were both committed to making money and buying stuff. And we're having a pretty good life doing that. And when I turned 29, all of a sudden, almost overnight, I couldn't even be in the presence of a child without crying. It was completely beyond my control. And after, you know, a good bit of confusion and soul searching and questioning myself, I realized that I could not go through my adult life without becoming a mother. So that was the first thing that happened. I realized I had to be a mother. My little contract with my husband was now null and void, and we had to have kids. So I'm a researcher by nature, and when I got pregnant, I quickly determined that a home birth was the safest way to birth a baby. So despite the fact that I lived in a state where midwifery was illegal, I found a doctor who was willing to come to my house and help me birth my child. And everything went great. My son was just a few hours old, and I'll never forget this. This was when my transformation really occurred. I had every intention of going back to work, hiring a full-time nanny. And when my son was born, I was completely overwhelmed with love in a way that I had never felt it before. It was beyond anything I could ever comprehend. And I remember sitting in the living room as the sun was coming in the window and nursing my baby boy, again, just a few hours old. And I got hit sort of with this two-pronged bolt of lightning. One prong said, I wonder what else they were wrong about. They being that cultural collective of naysayers who, you know, in this example had tried to convince me that birthing a child on my own was dangerous and reckless and fraught with all kinds of things that could go wrong. And the other thing that occurred to me, the other prong of that lightning bolt, was how in the world can I devote the next 18 years of my life to loving this child the way I love him right now and have him feel about me the way I feel about my parents? I had a uncomfortable, awkward relationship with my parents. We were not on good terms. I really didn't have many answers at that time as to where everything went wrong and whether anything could be fixed between me and my parents. All I knew was that we didn't have a good or solid relationship. And so I was sort of wrapped up, swept up in this vortex of overwhelmment, trying to answer those two questions. And, you know, it didn't take me more than a few hours of really deeply puzzling over it to be able to say to myself that my child, my baby, didn't have a week or a month or a year for me to complete my research, to figure out what the next step was. My baby needed a mother right now. And every minute was sort of ticking. How am I relating to my son in the most beneficial way to allow him to thrive, to allow him to develop a solid relationship with me, his mother, so that 18 years from now, we loved and respected and cared about each other enough to be, you know, involved in each other's lives. So what I decided was, I'm a researcher, so I'd read lots and lots of books about infants and baby rearing and toddlers and all of that. And as my mind is sort of filtering through, how am I going to spend the next 6 weeks before I go back to work with my son? You know, all I knew was that it felt wonderful having him in my arms.
Right.
And as I was, you know, I didn't have any role models. I didn't have any parents hovering over my head saying, do this, do that. This is the right way. This is the wrong way. So that was actually a good thing. I'm grateful for that in retrospect. And as I was processing, you know, all the information that I had read before he was born, it was just, it felt like It felt more like how to control children, how to manage children. It didn't feel like how to be connected with to a child, how to love a child. You know, the information is focused on, you know, certain ages for developmental readiness and this area and that area and how to, you know, how often a baby should eat, how often they should sleep, you know, how to train them to sleep through the night, et cetera, et cetera. And it felt like controlling, and that wasn't a feeling that I wanted to have. I wanted a feeling of connection. So what I decided was I was going to throw every single thing that I thought I knew about everything out the window and start from scratch. This was going to be my birthday, too. And I was going to learn how to see the world, use the world, manipulate the world, understand the world through my child's eyes. So my job, my challenge was to take all my cues from my son, and the two of us would figure out how life is supposed to be lived from that moment on. And so that's what we did. And that was the first day of Rethinking Everything.
That's such a wonderful story, and I relate to it so much. And we were both attorneys, and we decided that yuppie life in Philadelphia was not the way to go if we were going to have kids. And we bought an old farmhouse in upstate New York, and we found a midwife, although it was illegal in those days. We found a Native American who was willing to come off the reservation and give us a home birth. And I so relate. I did so much research ahead of time, and then I just said, this baby knows much better than I do what we need to do now. So I love what you said, take your cues from the baby. So
I know it's powerful that just this intuitive knowledge that we have of the wisdom that they come here with.
Exactly. They know what they need. They know how to tell us. They can communicate it. They know what they need from us, and we can, if we're open to responding, they'll get what they need.
Yes, and one of the things that I've learned from my children over all these years is that when we choose to become parents, our children actually arrive in our world to teach us. We're not actually here to teach them.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, Barb. It's a whole another chance for us to reinvent our lives, and they know what they want. They know what they need. It's beautiful. So what are some other examples as your children grew? You decided to devote your career to being a mother, right?
Mm-hmm. I did.
And obviously did other things on the side. what are some
after
examples?
After several years, you know, I developed some things on the side that were just a natural offshoot of my passion for mothering.
Right.
But for, you know, the first handful of years when my three kids were young, you know, we were just four peas in a pod, and every day was different, and you know, we did lots of, you know, camping and exploring and traveling and meeting people and going places and trying new foods and cooking and drawing and sculpting and, you know, everything under the sun, making, you know, musical instruments and, you know, attending plays and ballets and everything that, you know, everything that we could find.
Now, did you have parents say, oh, don't you go crazy just being with kids all day? Of course, I heard that.
I think I probably had, you know, some people ask me that. But, you know, it was really of great interest and importance to me to find, you know, sort of like-minded kids for my kids to play with. So I put a lot of effort into creating communities of families who were making some of the same decisions that I was. And so, you know, amongst those people now, you know, they don't say things like that. You know, an occasional neighbor might have something to say, but I wouldn't say that they were, you know, part of my circle of friends.
I think that's really an important point, to seek out other families that have made that kind of independent decision. I found the La Leche League at the time was very supportive of
that. Was certainly one of my first
really
groups too.
Being there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. In fact, that actually gave me the beginning of my speaking career as a lawyer. I didn't like speaking on other people's behalf because I wasn't so passionate about it. But once I was in the Leche League, I was giving speeches all the time. So it's wonderful to be doing what you're passionate about.
Yeah, the Leche League was a great support for on-demand breastfeeding, for the family bed, for my decision not to immunize my children.
Right.
Yeah, I'm grateful for my years in the Leche League.
Very cool. So you talk about not just helping kids learn or trying to control their development or push it, but to help them flourish. So what do you mean by that, Barb?
Yeah, what flourishing is all about is a sense of self-ownership. And what is self-ownership is something that even an infant is capable of feeling. When an infant just hours old cries, for example, you make a choice as a parent. You pick up the child immediately. You nurture that child in whatever ways you're able to nurture that child so that they're comforted and not in distress, not crying. That allows the child not only to feel like his needs are met, but in a subconscious way, the child feels heard. Another option that parents have is to not pick up a child who's crying. You know, for whatever reason. You know, I'm too busy. Babies just cry. They need to learn to comfort themselves. There's lots of reasons that people use when in not picking up a crying infant. And what that child learns is nobody's listening and my voice is not important. Now for
that's so key. Barbara, we're coming up on a commercial break already. But I love what you're saying, that the choices parents make, and so often the experts say, oh, well, babies cry. But I know for me, the whole first year, I never heard my child cry out full force. Like sometimes
right.
You'll hear a baby in a shop and
I know.
I was
didn't
like,
cry until
why
he fell
he?
Off a two-wheeled bicycle.
Right. Exactly. It's you think, I mean, they used to say, oh, that's spoiling the child, but spoiling is where you substitute something other than love and attention.
Yeah,
you can't,
no
I don't
spoiling
believe
at all.
You can, yeah, you can't overdo love and attention. So, we're up on a break and, so please listeners, stay tuned for more with Barbara Lundgren.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolf has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolf.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking today with Barb Lundgren, who's the founder of the International Conference on Rethinking Everything. And it's now in its 16th year. It takes place in September in Texas. And we're talking about mothering, how she rethought everything when she first had her first child. And we're having a lot of fun because I went through that kind of awakening myself. That everything we thought about, oh, kids just being kids, and the pull that a child has for a new mother is incredible. And I remember, Barb, I had a friend who was a mortgage banker, and then she became an attorney, and she was just going to fit her kids right into her life. And I said, wait till you hold that little baby in your arms. Everything will change. Mm-hmm. And when I saw her a month or two later, she said, man, you're the only one who told me that, but it's absolutely true. Everything
changed.
Did she
say yes to it?
Partly. She kept her job, but I think it's been very hard on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we were talking about self-ownership because that's the feeling that an organism, a human being, has to have in order to flourish. Do I own my life? Am I in charge of my life? Am I making decisions for myself? Am I naturally in the flow of the consequences of those decisions? Do I feel good about who I am?
Yeah, do I have some power in this world? Is it going to respond to me? And where do they learn that? They learn that from their parent.
They learn it through freedom, to be, freedom to set the course for their own life. And in my example of an infant, it starts that young. When you choose not to pick up a baby in distress, a baby that's crying, the message that you have taught that child is, nobody's listening and my voice is not important. Now, for some personality types, they may spend the rest of their life trying to overcome that initial feeling that they had about themselves as an infant.
Yes,
other personality types are more resilient.
We tell our schools that somehow they have to make kids feel like they have a voice and like they can make a difference, but it starts right there in the cradle or the bed.
And it doesn't matter what they tell them in school because it's just words. The kids are still required to go every day and do what the teacher says.
Exactly.
So
yes,
it's extremely confusing and conflicting for a child.
Right. I want to talk more about education a little later, but first about the parents. How does a parent best facilitate a child's growth and learning? How do we get out of the way but still maintain protective boundaries?
What do you mean by protective boundaries?
Well,
things that sort of safeguard a child. Is that what
yes.
you're talking about?
Yes, I think there's a lot of confusion about whether you try to control a child or whether you just create an environment that's safe and age appropriate.
And are we talking about 1-year-olds running into a street with traffic, or are we talking about 2-year-olds brushing their teeth, or are we talking about stranger danger kinds of things, or all of the above?
Well, all of the above. That I wanted really to have you expound on your approach to that because
sure, I can talk to you about
what
my children have taught me about natural boundary setting.
Good. Yes.
And that is that I don't need to tell my children how to live in any shape, any way, any form whatsoever. I can share my personal experiences with them, and I'm always obligated to do that, and I want to do that. And my children are always coming to me for advice because they know that they can trust me for honest information. And they also know that after I tell them what my thoughts are, what my research is, what my experience has been, what I think about, they know that I will support whatever they decide to do. No matter how much I disagree with it, I will still support it. Now, of course, that does not include a 1-year-old wanting to run into traffic.
Right.
But it does mean that when my 5-year-old, and this is a true story in my case, when my 5-year-old wants to climb to the top of a 30-foot tree. I realize that I know from watching my child for the first 5 years of his life that no one wants to get hurt. I also know that virtually no one will get hurt when they're in a free environment, when I'm not saying things to them like, stop running or you'll hurt yourself. If I just
or the opposite, when kids get dared, oh, keep going, instead of letting them trust their own sense.
I never found that to happen. I think that that might happen in artificial school settings.
Right.
But in true natural environments where children are free and powerful to make their own decisions and experiment with life on their own terms, if someone dares them, they just look at them cross-eyed and say, you do it. I'm not stupid.
Exactly.
That's been exactly my experience. You know, all
yes.
three of my kids, when they became teenagers, wanted to go to, you know, a mainstream party, you know, where there was drugs and alcohol. And we had our conversations about it. And we had our plans for what would happen if they needed me to pick them up or, you know, if there was, you know, something that they were afraid of or uncomfortable with, you know, at the party. And even though I disagreed with the whole idea of attending, they each chose to attend. And, you know, I never tried to prevent them from going or say, you know, see, I told you so. You know, we would just have a great conversation about it when they came home. And in all three cases, all different ages, all different friends, different locations, different houses, you know, they came home and we talk about it. And they just basically would shrug their shoulders and say, the whole thing is so silly, you know. People don't are so afraid to be themselves without drugs and alcohol. And then, you know, they can't dance, for example, because they're afraid of how they're going to look. They can't have a real conversation because they're afraid of exposing who they really are. They can't try something new because they're afraid their people are going to make fun of them. You know, they get high and just sit on a couch and stare at a TV. I mean, is that fun? And in all three of my kids' cases, you know, they just needed one party, but they needed
right.
to do it on their own terms and sort of see how it works. And I'm sure they processed, you know, the whole sociology and psychology behind it for a good long while, but they made the decision and, you know, they entered the world on their own terms and they wanted to see how it worked and they didn't need it.
That reminds
because
me one time.
Artificial.
Yes, yes. It reminds me one time my daughter wanted to go to a party that sounded a little off, and I said I'd drive her over there and wait till to see if she really wanted to be there or not, and if she wanted to stay, then I'd come pick her up whenever she called. So we drove up to the party, and there were people all behind the bushes doing things that didn't look too good. And she finally said, Mom, I don't need to go.
Uh-huh.
I said, that's great. Okay.
She was by herself?
But, yeah. So so they when you give them that kind of freedom, they use their heads, and
they
know
do,
what they want to do.
Freedom also means responsibility. There is no such thing as freedom without responsibility. It's not like saying, you know, if you want to eat dessert every night for dinner for the rest of your life and never have, you know, a fruit or vegetable, you can do it and suffer no side effects. I mean,
right.
That's not part of the freedom. You know, the freedom of saying, I don't want dinner tonight, I just want dessert, is that, you know, invariably, a few hours later, they're either hungry for fruits and vegetables, or the next day they're, you know, feeling a little tired or, you know, don't have as much energy, or maybe they're caught a sore throat or something. And, you know, it gives us lots of opportunity for our own discussion and research on, you know, how the immune system works and, you know, what's required to maintain a, you know, a strong, clear, healthy body, and they experiment. You know, they want to test it to see if this is really true, because some of that stuff really tastes awesome.
Right.
But they do figure it out. They do figure it out after a night of trick-or-treating, and, you know, they come home and eat 2 pounds of candy. The next day, they feel like hell.
Right. But they'll always want to test it if you don't let them do it.
Exactly. And after that first day, they're ready to throw it in the garbage can.
Right, right. I wanted
to
return to
say no, you can't go because we don't believe in candy, or you can only have 2 pieces, or, you know, let me just pick out the good things that I want you to have. You can't have anything else. You know, put limits on what. I mean, yes, but the temptation is always to put limits on it, because I there's a serious part of me that thinks that I know more than my children. But I also have learned that they are genuinely intelligent and capable of knowing without my help what feels right, what feels appropriate. I've never had to teach my children not to pull the legs off of a frog, for example.
Right.
I mean, why would it ever occur to a child who's loved and nurtured and supported to injure or hurt another living creature?
Exactly. I want to return to a point you made earlier about watching. I think many mothers are in a catch-22 because they have not been around their children enough to actually trust. Like you said, you learned they're intelligent. They make good decisions. They know what responsibility is. But if you haven't spent enough time around them, there's always that fear that, oh, maybe they haven't matured. Maybe they don't know to make good decisions. And so I think there's kind of a catch-22 in our whole society where mothers don't have enough exposure to their children to learn that innate trust, and also to have the kids trust you.
Yeah, in reality, Randy, it's a myth to think that you can do it all. You actually can't, because we all have 24 hours in a given day. Every single one of us, the same number of hours every day.
Right.
To do with as we please. And if I'm spending 6 or 8 or 10 hours a day away from my child, in his prime awake state, when he's exploring the world and discovering things right and left, asking questions, putting things together, and I'm missing that, it's impossible for me to come home or just spend weekends with him or a couple of hours at night and understand his evolution.
Exactly.
And it very naturally puts me in a place where I'm now obligated to trust experts, because I don't know my child. And every
exactly,
child really
yes.
is different.
Now, Barbara, you've talked about, you've said that consistency is far overrated. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, I think that consistency is one of those messages that are given to parents as, you know, above all else, be consistent with your child. And I think it's one of the biggest mistakes that we can make with our children is to see consistency as some god. Consistency is really just conformity. And when I look at my child, when I imagine raising an intelligent, confident, capable child, the first thing that I realize is that consistency won't get me there, won't get him there. Because if I'm reinforcing the same things every day, day in and day out. You have to go to bed at 8 o'clock because this is your bedtime. You have to eat at noon because this is the time we eat. You have to eat your dinner before you have dessert. You can't, you know, play unless it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. Whatever consistent rules that we come up with as parents. All I'm doing is limiting my child. And, of course, in that process, I'm limiting myself as well. Consistency really doesn't feel good. What I want for my child is that we're capable of living life in a flow where every day can be different if we choose for it to be different. Every moment can be different if we choose for it to be different. If it's a beautiful night, none of my kids went to school, so we never had any, you know, school time rituals to adhere to. And, of course, one of the main reasons we didn't choose school was for this whole consistency issue. But if it's a beautiful night and the stars are out and, you know, our friends call and say, let's hop in the car and spread a blanket out in the field and, you know, find constellations until 3 o'clock in the morning, why would I say no to that?
Right,
because
exactly.
Because it's bedtime? I would never say no to that.
Right. I think a lot of the manipulation that we see between parents and children is around this consistency. Because if you have some rule that isn't based on anything intrinsic to the family life, then mm-hmm. the kids are going to play with it. They're going to bargain with you about it and make completely unnecessary conflict over it.
The only thing that I feel should be consistent in our lives is the continual drive to say yes to the continual drive that we each have to move towards the thoughts and the actions that allow us to feel good and joyful and empowered. That's the only consistency that matters, is to say yes to that.
Yeah, that's very powerful. And to empower our kids through our consistent openness to expressing our love and giving them their freedom. That's beautifully said, Barb. Thanks so much. I want to, after our next break, I want to tell more about your conference because it's a fabulous opportunity for families to really expose themselves more fully to a community that thinks openly like this. And I also want to talk about education when we come back. And now you said you homeschooled your kids. One of the things that I noticed when I was teaching a parenting course when my kids were still tiny and weren't getting ready for school, but I realized that the stresses in the family were all about this consistency, getting them to bed on time, getting to do their homework on time, getting them up on time for the bus, none of which the kids wanted to do. And they say, why do I have to go to school? And the parents don't have a good reason except it's the law. So
right.
it was
they think
all
it's the law.
Given up power to external authority and enforcing consistency that the kids knew didn't make sense. So I totally agree with the value of love and freedom in the home. So let's talk about your conference and then some more about educational options when we come back.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
The Total Education Network is the only network that airs shows 7 days a week on various stations. Please go to our website, www.TotalTutor.org for more information about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide educational news and tips for parents. The Total Education Network, the talk shop for parents, teachers, and administrators. That's www.totaltutor.org.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking with Barb Lundgren, who is the founder of the Rethinking Everything International Conference for families to really rethink everything and to create a more open, free, and creative environment. And we've been sharing some great thoughts about truly responding openly to your children. And we were talking about consistency being unnecessary, not running into the street when you're 1 year old. Yeah, you're consistent about that. But if the stars are shining outside, why not let them enjoy the fireflies or whatever? And we were talking at the break, Barb, about that, how the discipline is very tightly connected to that we think we have to enforce these irrational rules that we set up, and we end up using what is euphemistically called discipline, which actually is an affront to the child.
It is. It's abuse, and it's actually the polar opposite of what children require in order to thrive in the world. What we need to be doing as parents, and what is effective in our child's maximum sense of self-ownership. In a world where a child is free and nurtured to explore the world on his own terms, self-discipline is always present, is always in force, and it's always a magical thing to watch. But
yes,
under no circumstances will a child in that surrounding ever need to be disciplined by another. Because when he's making his own decisions, when he's moving through life and figuring out how the world works, when he is respected and listened to, he knows, for example, when he's done something that he regrets. And he doesn't need me to discipline him for that, because he immediately feels remorseful. And he will, on his own, say, I'm sorry I did that. Or, I didn't mean to do that. Can I get you another one? Or whatever the situation is.
Right.
If you just allow yourself to be an observer and trust that his natural sense of right and wrong, which is very much present, unless it's been thwarted out of him, he absolutely, because he feels bad when he does something that hurts another person, for example, he'll respond accordingly. He won't try to cover it up or lie. A marker of how free your household is, can your child come to you and say, I just broke the window?
Right, right. Don't try to hide it. There's a wonderful book called Moral Minds that gives all the research showing, and I don't think you need research, you just watch your children, but all the research showing that kids are born with a very strong moral sense as long as the environment allows it to mature.
Right, it allows it to develop, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. So I want to be sure and talk about your conference coming up this September, and you're in your 16th year. What inspired you to start this conference, and how did you get it going, Barb? It's quite an accomplishment.
Well, I was learning so much about children and what they needed to thrive in this world many years ago. And in my effort to create sort of like-minded communities where I lived so that my kids would have, good, solid friendships and I could find that kindred spirit with other parents that I was seeking. One of the things that I did with a friend was we decided to put together a little one-day sort of class, if you will, on how to raise kids in this way. And we actually did this for a couple of years and went to libraries and people's homes and that sort of thing and, you know, sat in a living room or a library conference room and talked to parents with little kids running around for 8 hours about the nature of childhood and education and the kinds of things we're talking about right now. And what happened was, you know, people loved the class. They left feeling like a huge weight had been lifted from their shoulders. You mean I can do this? This is legal. I can just enjoy my child. That's allowed. And so it was really rewarding. But what was happening was a lot of the families who were attending the one-day sessions were calling me, you know, afterwards because they were afraid. You know, they had a mother who was a principal or a neighbor who was a teacher or, you know, a husband who was doubting or they just felt uncomfortable. You know, it's Monday morning. What do we do? Because of their own conditioned ideas of how we spend our days in these very strict schedules. And so I was spending a lot of time sort of counseling people, and it really just started to feel overwhelming. So I thought, well, there's a real need out there, and I can't meet that need because I have three children that I'm pretty devoted to. So I'm going to try to create a conference so that we can bring together a lot of people who are in varying stages of creating a life like this and bring in other people who have a lot of experience that can share their stories with, you know, some of the new people and, you know, really sort of take the weight off my shoulders of, you know, Barb is some kind of guru who has answers for you and, you know, really make it a community of people of, you know, talking to each other and listening and sharing stories and, you know, every kid is different. So many different situations come up, so many different kinds of families. So I just decided, you know, I would sort of build it and they will come and created the first conference. And it's actually very successful, and oh, people were just in lines at the end of it, you know, to hug me and thank me, and I knew that I had to do it again. So this will be the 16th year, and it actually gets bigger and broader, and we keep finding plenty of stuff to rethink every year.
That's wonderful. I'm curious, since you've been doing it so long and your kids are grown now, what kinds of changes have you seen over that period? What are there new challenges that you see families facing related to what we've been discussing or even different challenges?
Well, one thing that I'm really focusing a lot on this year for the first time is the sexual development of children from birth onward, because one of the things that I've noticed, even amongst people in this sort of network, is the developing fear of children being naked, for example, sexual abuse, predators, victimization, CPS. And it's largely paranoia because of all the media attention that's focused on these topics.
Right.
And it seems to have reached a point where people are almost afraid to have a newborn baby be naked.
Oh, my.
And it's just not right. The sexual development of the human being is integral to a thriving condition. My children, for example, hardly even put clothes on until they were six.
It's almost Victorian.
I mean, they wore clothes easily every time we went out of the house. We have a big backyard, so as soon as we came in the house and played outside, went swimming, immediately they were naked. And just that ability to choose that naked state, the freedom that you feel from that, being able to sleep that way, eat that way, play that way, swim that way, is a personal choice. And it's extremely important to childhood development. And what we do know, and this is one of the reasons why I publish a magazine called Rethinking Everything Sex, is because what we do know culturally is that almost everything in our world that's sexually related doesn't work in our Western
yes.
world.
One of the things that my Indian midwife told me was that incest never happened in the families she had grown up with, that where they had a family bed and everybody was comfortable with everybody, that incest only happened when the missionaries came in and said they all had to keep their clothes on and the boys had to sleep in different rooms from the girls. It was quite an eye opener, because people assume that she grew up in the Appalachians in a poor area, and they assume that, you know, there was, it's all incestuous. But she said, when it was truly open, the kids running around and sharing space, and there was much, much less of that kind of abuse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where everybody just felt comfortable.
I read a book just recently called The Sensuous Child by Hal Wells. It was published, I think, in 1976. Just discovered the book recently through a friend. Devoured it. It's out of print. And I was shocked at how much we have devolved as a culture sexually since 1976.
Mm. Yes.
I mean, what I read in that book, I think, would just completely terrify most parents. And yet, it's just a description of normal, natural sexual functioning.
Well, my father was an infertility specialist, a physician, OBGYN, and he studied sexual practice all around the world. And so we had a very open family.
Oh, wonderful. You talked about sex a lot.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It was normal dinner conversation, and he often helped couples conceive simply by getting comfortable with their bodies and walking around naked instead of all robed and with curlers in their hair. And that was after the Mayo Clinic, this one case, after the Mayo Clinic had failed with their chemicals. He just had a conversation with them about what their program was in the evening, and a month later they were pregnant.
Mm, wow, that's remarkable.
Yeah, that starts with the baby, you know, let them kick and roll over and do whatever, and letting little brothers and sisters be in the bath together at 2 and 4 and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So, when you allow children the freedom to be without trying to instill fear in them or rules about what's right and wrong, and just watch what happens. And force yourself to step back when you see something happening that you think, oh, my God, what will the neighbor say? The truth is that we are capable as parents of creating communities called homes that maximize our children's natural sexual development. Our neighbors never have to know what goes on in our own homes.
Exactly.
Whether our children are playing naked
sorry
or
to,
not.
I have to interrupt you, Barbara, because we're coming up on the end of the show already, but I want to make sure everybody knows to go to www.rethinkingeverything.net to learn about the conference. It's all gone live this week, you told me. And also you can contribute to one of those magazines, Rethinking Everything Parent or Life or Sex. And this has been most interesting and enlightening conversation. And do you have any last directive for our listeners, Barb, before we have to close?
Well, I think the simplest thing that I'd like to leave your listeners with is say yes to your child.
Ah, beautiful.
Before you even consider saying no, ask yourself what no feels like and do your level best to get to yes. Even if it means your child says, I want to jump off the roof. That's the example that I use. Because even though you're not going to say yes, go ahead and climb up on the roof and jump off, you can get in your child's shoes and understand the feeling that he wants to have and help him facilitate that feeling without jumping off the roof. You can hold his hand while he jumps off the table or jumps off a chair or jumps off of a few steps. You can facilitate that feeling by, you know, having him jump on a trampoline or, you know, any number of things. But get to that place of yes, where you're facilitating what your child is asking for instead of finding reasons to say no.
That's beautiful, Barb. This is Barb Lundgren, founder of Rethink Everything. Thanks so much for being our guest on Family First, and thanks to my sponsors for helping out. And have a glorious conference in September.
Thank you, Randy. Good to talk to you.
Take care now. Pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.